Good evening. We're going to start without a quorum. So for the folks who are here, just to know what that means is we can't take an action. So what we're probably going to do is hear Representative Tilbury's bill and move it and lay it over after he's long done. And we're sending it to the floor. But members, and for folks who are here, I want to tell you that there's a problem in the attendance and why that is, and that's just how it works at this time of session. We had a very long session on the floor today, much longer than we thought, followed by a long caucus, but we've run a little late. But a lot of members went to the Romanian delegation event that Representative Less had set up prior to knowing about this hearing. So they have been in here and checked in, and they need to get off to visit some folks that are here from Romania, and they'll be coming back. So we're just going to get started. And we now have a quorum, so Representative Tilbury moves. House File 3306. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I'm confident that everyone will be able to support this bill. It is the Securities Act brought out by the Commerce Committee or the Commerce Department. And I'm carrying that bill. And the reason it came to taxes was there was a fee that was listed as something new. And I just want to say that was not a new fee. It's a $100 fee, and it covered federal-covered investment advisors. However, the new language that came about calls these people federal-covered advisors. So there's no new fee. It just was a change of title of what they called these people. And so no new fee of $100 is really where I'm at.
Okay, so members, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. Representative Tilbury is here because he's got a fee in the bill, and we know if you get to the floor with the fee and you haven't spent your taxes, you'll spend an hour on the floor. So, are there questions to the fee? That's why this bill is here. If not, Representative Tilbury, I don't know if your testifier wants to say anything, otherwise we're just going to pass it off on a clay.
No, he doesn't want to say a word.
Okay, and is this bill to the floor, correct? You've been everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so members all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The bill passes and is sent off to the General Register.
Thank you.
Madam
Chair.
And so now we're going to hear from Representative Clark. Is he in the room? Okay. So I think, is it Representative Dabney would like to move this bill?
Yes, please. Mr. President, Madam Chair.
So Representative Dabney moves. House File 3821. Sorry. Welcome, Representative Clark. And folks who are here know that that we're focused on the financing part of this bill. The neighborhood kind of local governance issues were heard in local government committee, Representative Hillstrom's committee, of which I can see a number of you were at that hearing. So you know that part was dealt with there.
Just for the audience to clarify, the motion is to lay over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Is that correct?
That's right.
So there will be no vote taken this evening?
No vote taken this evening.
Just trying to lay the expectation.
Yeah, and Representative Dabney is doing me a favor there, and all of you, to let you know that is how the tax committee pretty much deals with all tax bills. They are considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. So the fact that we won't be voting on it doesn't mean anything. It's just the process we follow. So, thank you, Representative Dabney, for that. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this bill, House Bill 3821, would extend the tax and financing districts in Minneapolis that were created before 1979, and the purpose of that, of course, is to continue to fund the Neighborhood Revitalization Program, which was enacted in the legislature, I think, in 1990.
Yeah.
And at that time, there's people here who heard the bill last year. This project was created, the program was created, to help empower neighborhoods to do some of their own economic development planning in the community, and it has a neighborhood board that decides how that money would be spent. We put certain provisions in law. And These districts would be decertified on August 1, 2009, unless we extended them. And Madam Chair, I think what I'd like to do is just have a little bit of testimony about some of the finances that are involved so that we can then get to the taxes. Because one of the things you'll find is that I think the amount of money that, the original promise in the legislation was that there'd be about $400 million over the period of the 20 years, and because of the change in state law around the, I believe, commercial industrial properties, that number dropped over the period of time is about $274 million. What the good news is that I like to brag about is that that money leveraged incredible money from the community at large, probably about $1 billion that we estimate, and untold numbers of volunteer hours, people who were really working to revitalize neighborhoods that were just struggling. And some of you have been to the inner city in Minneapolis, north and south Minneapolis in particular, where you can see that things, areas that were just devastated are now being revitalized. And of course, this extends throughout the whole city, but there's particularly dramatic changes in some of the communities that those of us who live and represent the inner city can claim and bring to the state, renewed property tax values that contribute to the whole state. So, I'd like to bring just a couple people from the neighborhood to talk a little bit about some of the tax implications of some of this revitalization. We'll try to keep to what you're talking about. And I know my city wants to testify, and there'll probably be a few other folks. So,
great. We can do that. Whatever you'd like, Representative Clark.
And we have our Senate author here, too. And
well,
maybe she'd like to
welcome.
Join us.
You're welcome to join us, please.
If you want to make a few comments. Senator Torres-Ray.
So, member Senator Torres-Ray is going to join us, and the testifier, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for this opportunity. This is really very important, not only for my district, but for the city of Minneapolis, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak about this program. You will hear from the testifiers that are here representing several neighborhood associations about the value of this program and what they have contributed. The majority contribute to our district. Majority of these people are volunteers who spend hundreds and hundreds of hours working in parks, working with seniors, working in early childhood education programs, working in schools, working with people who need to renovate their homes, and I really would like you to give us this opportunity to talk about this program and to brag about this program, because this is something that we really want to protect, and we want your support, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We want to continue this program, and it will be our decision, your decision here in the House and in the Senate, to continue this program, because the program expires this year. And without extending this funding, thousands of volunteers will not continue to work in these programs, and this will be a tremendous loss for the city of Minneapolis.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Doug Walter. I'm staff member at the Nokomis East Neighborhood Association. I'd like to talk just briefly because Representative Clark and Senator Torres-Ray have said a lot of what I was going to say. That's great. I know you've been here a long time. We're all tired. We've been here since 9 this morning, too. I'd just like to say briefly why we're here and why we want this legislation or why we need this legislation. I am here, first of all, on behalf of some 40 neighborhood organizations out of the 72 in Minneapolis. I represent the professional side of it, the staff side, and I'm by far not the best speaker on this. I want to tell you that I joined this neighborhood program in 1999 as a volunteer and went on staff in 2002. I left the private sector and took a 40% pay cut simply because I saw the value in what it was doing to the neighborhood. One of the things that I noticed was that the individuals that come to the table or get the loans, make the improvements, somehow get involved, develop an ownership in the city, in their neighborhood, in the city, and the area at large. It stopped the turnaround of middle-class flight and flight families, people with children who are leaving the city. I joined because I saw that and I thought I could do a benefit. And there are many others in the system doing the same thing. Why we're here, why we want this legislation, is because time is running out. June 30th, 2009, the legislation enabling the TIF districts, the pre-79 TIF districts in Minneapolis, runs out. At that point, we run out of money. About 65 or 70% of the neighborhood organizations in Minneapolis use NRP funding as their primary source of funding. In other words, we will stop operations. The system will shut down. The neighborhoods will close. And even though there were some 40 neighborhoods before NRP started out in 1991, those organizations are now 501c3s with legal obligations, missions. They will not be able to succeed in their current form. Whether they can go back to being a church basement organization or not, I don't know. This House File 3821, in its form as delivered to you, allows the original $400 million commitment that was made by the state in 1990 to be continued. We feel that NRP and the neighborhoods have kept our side of the commitment already. Accountability was one of them. We have our state audits. We maintain all the standards that we need to do for federal and state nonprofits. The housing goals are set at close to 53%. We've met or exceeded that standard. One of the goals, or one of the things that the state set, was that we would include 100% of the city, and we now do that. The 72 organizations cover 100% of the residents. So we would like to see the state help us continue to fulfill the program as it was originally set at that $400 million. As was mentioned, about 280 by 2009, by the time it's been, 280 will have been spent. That leaves us with $110 million shortfall in there. Some of it, of course, is because of the commercial tax, residential tax property split, swap in 2001. Some of it is for other reasons, but we would like to continue that and fulfill our mission in there greatly. There are many ways of doing this. We understand, and anyone that follows me tonight understands fully, the TIFs and LGA levies or anything else right now is really tough, especially with the financial. And a lot of you have been sitting in the caucuses earlier. I understand we're looking at cutting budgets, and we're coming to you at a really tough time. But we think in the long run that what we do, the $280 that's already been invested, for instance, has returned that $1 billion. 100,000 volunteer hours are donated to improving the city every year. There are 1,000 board members, an uncounted number of volunteers in various committees. And these people put something back into the city that's real improvement, and we think it's a small investment. So we're asking and hoping that you can find a way to continue a stable source of funding into the future. Thank you.
Excuse me, did you tell us your name for the tape?
Doug Walter.
Doug Walter.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
You probably did, but I
didn't probably remember. Didn't. I don't know.
That's okay. We didn't tell you our names either. That's fine. Thank you for being here. Representative Clark, did you have further testifiers? Okay, two more. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Rita Ulrich. I also work, I'm on staff with the Tacoma Seas Neighborhood Association. For the record, I'm off the clock today, all day. I came to speak because this bill is really about something that is dear to my heart. It is a program that speaks to and at the heart of is citizen participation, and that is something that I have spent most of my 25 years in the public and nonprofit sector doing. And I have never seen a model that is as effective as NRP at involving residents in determining the future of their neighborhoods, their city. NRP gives residents a voice in decisions that affect their lives. They provide valuable input on planning development issues at meetings organized by the neighborhood organizations. They work with their police precincts to identify and address crime and safety issues. Collectively, they determine what their neighborhoods need most and work then with partners such as schools, parks, libraries, and other nonprofits to achieve those goals. Every year, thousands of residents commit their time, energy, and skills, as Doug just mentioned. In the Tacoma Seas, residents last year volunteered well over 2,000 hours on neighborhood projects, town meetings, doing research, reviewing development projects, tending gardens at Lake Nokomis, doing watershed cleanup, attending town meetings, reminding residents to water the young trees that we just funded planting, And other things. Every year, the time we spend varies, but the amount of time doesn't vary that much. We're very committed. In addition, we attend meetings where they contribute their ideas and opinions on a variety of topics, whether it be development proposals, input on the city budget, street reconstruction, the future of closed schools in the neighborhood, liquor licenses, park improvements. It's an important avenue for citizens to let the city know what they're thinking. NRP is the envy of cities around the United States. It is a vital component, I believe, of keeping Minneapolis a great place to live, work, and visit. I also believe that if NRP is allowed to end, it won't be replaced, and gone with it would be the trust and willingness of thousands of volunteers and residents who have made personal investments and personal commitments to this city. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ulrich. Welcome.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Cheryl Plath. I live at 2536 Eastern Avenue South in Minneapolis, and I'm a volunteer and never on the clock. I'm a former college teacher, and I took a 100% pay cut to do this. So anyway, these are my handouts, and I want to, the tax committee, I want to just talk taxes, although I spent my thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars as a volunteer. But I think that you can see from this, the first one on top, the Phillips, that NRP was birthed in a time that was pretty much like this. You can see that the home ownership vacancy rate and rental vacancy rate is skyrocketing. People are leaving the city. I know it's dramatic. I can see the frown on your face. Yeah. This really is the way the vacancy rate is going. From 1980 to 1999, the flight from the city was huge. And if you talk to anybody that put this thing together, they were responding to that flight and the fear that Minneapolis was just plain losing its population and its housing. That's why they did this. They figured this out. If you talk to Fraser, Brown Fraser, and oh gosh, there's numerous people that worked on this, but they were desperate. Now, this is an unusual program. It's very dramatic. When we went down to Des Moines and we suggested that they share money with the neighborhoods and let them decide, one of the people honestly said, oh, we'd never do that. And I know that a study in Los Angeles, we are the only city that's doing this, but we are one of the only major cities that has kept their middle class intact. And you can see that the drop in, now it's true, from 1990 to 2000, it was an area that was, it was a time of financial flushness compared to whatever, compared to the past. However, I think I submit that we are entering a time that resembles the 1980 to 90 graph. If I look at Phillips is looking a little like this now. And I guess I'm thinking really in terms of dollars and cents. If you look at the second page on the Phillips thing, you can see that the poverty rate was skyrocketing and started to level off and go down under NRP. Also under the better economy, but I don't think that we would have held our homeowners without giving them something to do and some way of fixing the things around them. Representative Clark asked me to look for some other examples, but if you look at the second one, Wake Park is way up north. They didn't have the drop in rental, in people renting. They didn't have the drop in population, but they did have a substantial deterioration of their housing stock, and then it returns under NRP. And I went and looked at Carriggs, and Carriggs is the same, and it goes up with boarded and vacant and renters leaving, and then it, under NRP, it starts to go down. And if you wonder why all of this is, if you look at these pictures, I mean, this is our NRP project. We didn't do anything weird or anything exotic or any funding, something strange. We stuck to the housing thing and we fixed Phillips. If you saw the dots of boarded and vacant on the housing before we did this, you can see here's what was replaced with these townhomes. There's 28 of these. They bring back, this is a zero tax revenue and actually a negative because of the crime and everything else that was going on there. That costs a lot of money to the city. This brings in probably, what, $2,500 or $3,000 a year for taxes? That's that's $84,000 that never was there. And on the second page, we have we did an apartment building, and all of this was volunteer labor. I mean, I wrote half of this stuff to get the grant, so I know. I was free. And we built this apartment building. Here's what was there before. We saved the Mercado and the investment of the city in the Bloom Ridge area with all of the Hispanic businesses. This was full of games. They were actually shooting at the police. We replaced this with an apartment building, 34 units, all affordable, and it's bringing in tax revenue. Now, this is the tax committee. That's what you're concerned with. And I would claim that this is essential for the future of Minneapolis and its tax revenue. When we see the property values that are going down and the loss of tax revenue because of the foreclosures and flight, we are going to experience the same thing that you saw in these graphs. And I want this for social reasons and ethical reasons. However, this is the tax committee. We already talked about that in the other committee. And I think this is a financial necessity to our largest city. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pass. Are there other testifiers? Representative Clark.
I'm sorry, there is another person who wanted to testify about some of these values. Ron?
Okay.
And then in the city is ready to come forward.
Okay. Yes, welcome.
Ron, you can.
Was it Touche? That is a great name. Are you kidding me? Touche. Wow.
I should probably point out the killing joke and fencing.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying here.
Or Touche Turtle, whichever you want to go with.
Could run for office with a name like that. Representative Touche.
No, I'm going to leave that.
Okay.
That's not my forte. Yes. My name is Ron Touche. I'm probably an unlikely person to be here today. I live in Elk River, Minnesota. In fact, I live past Elk River. And, you know, I lived out in the country all my entire life. And the thing that brought me here today was I had heard about this bill, NRP 3643, and I understood that it was in danger of this program going away. And it prompted me to write a letter to my senator, Betsy Wergen, and I wanted to just let her know some thoughts that I had. That's kind of how this happened. I did want to read what I sent to her, and I'll just paraphrase it to the body of it. I wanted to pass along to you my personal experience and observations regarding the neighborhood groups that are funded by this bill, SF 3643, especially the measurable impact that they have had, that they have on the neighborhood and residents that they serve. I also have been tremendously impacted simply by the response that these neighborhood organizations garner within the individual neighborhoods that they serve. This response starts right at the individual homeowners and tenants equally. You know, there's in a lot of areas, it's not like out in Elk River where everybody owns their home. There's it's probably half and half. I'm not sure what it is, but half and half I would bet. Serves the homeowners and tenants equally, and moves on to include and embrace the businesses that both are located in the neighborhood and that do business in the neighborhood. It is truly amazing to me to watch a neighborhood come together as volunteers for a single purpose of making their neighborhood better. No profit involved, just neighbors being neighbors, helping their neighbors. I asked her to give me a chance to talk to her about the tangible positive effect that this program has achieved in just a few neighborhoods that I've been personally involved with. Betsy called me, and I visited with her for a while, and she encouraged me to come down here. And this is a new thing for me. I've not done this before. But what really strikes me about this program, and it's tax dollars providing it, is that it makes a change in a real world way in a neighborhood. It isn't going to the city, it's going to the people of the city. And I'm not one that's, I like people in communities to kind of work for themselves and pull themselves up, if you will. And I think that's what this program does. The 3 years that I've been involved with, or where I've seen it, 3 years ago, one of my agents talked me into coming into Minneapolis and doing some work there. I'm a real estate broker. And I had never done anything in Minneapolis before. And it's like, well, why do I want to do that? And he says, well, because it's good. it's a great neighborhood. So I came in and I looked at a few deals, and the Holland Neighborhood Association, Holland Neighborhood Improvement Association, were the folks, and that's Kevin sitting next to me here, that kind of showed me the things that were happening in this particular neighborhood, which is Northeast, and the things that needed to be done. And I was really impressed by the method with which this organization worked. It didn't go out, write checks to people and say, here, you're done, you're fixed. Instead, what it did is it put together coalitions of business people like me that had the means to do something, volunteers from the neighborhood, and not just volunteers, a few, but I'm talking homeowners, renters, never seen that before. You know, typically renters don't necessarily take a real vested interest in the neighborhood, but renters, business owners, and people that just had a connection to that neighborhood, but they took all these people and they made a difference. And I wanted to give you a couple of specific things. In particular, there was a house that was across from the front doors of the high school. That house was in horrid shape, broken windows. I'm pretty certain that the door did not latch nor lock, and was a problem with drugs and other activities all going on across the front door of a high school. What happened with this is the NRP program, through its connections, put together a coalition of people that took that house, sold it to an investor, bought it from the people that owned it, no money, and it was his money, fixed the house up, and then sold it to a family that I think the guy is the chef. And now you have a house that's in great shape across from that high school front door that has a family, and I think they have two kids in that house. And I don't believe that there was much money, and Kevin could maybe speak to if there was any cash involved, but it was very little. It was more because the program existed and was able to tie all those folks together. Another example would be there was a property on Washington Street, just off Lowry, that was used as a junkyard and towing yard, body shop, a little drug sales going out of there, I understand. Who knows what other activities. Just a terrible looking place, junk, whatever it was. Kevin, again, my experience has been with the Holland neighborhood, so I'm going to use all the examples I have from there, because that's where I have. Kevin talked me into taking that on, and now located on that spot is no longer a junkyard, no longer a towing yard, no longer any pollution happening, no drugs, no nothing. Instead, it's an art company that does art restoration. Along with that, put a new roof on it, new doors, new paint, upgraded the parking lot, and he has a whole bunch of employees. Didn't exist in that neighborhood before. So not only did we take something that was detrimental, we turned that into something that was good for the community and provided jobs for the community. Another example would be a company called Good Karma, great name, does auto repair. They were in a building that was near the U.S. Bank site, and the U.S. Bank development was going to push them out because they lost all of their parking. Can't operate a car repair place with no parking, no place to put any cars. We ended up, again, through this program, getting connected up there. He ended up buying the old radiator shop on Lowry, right at the railroad tracks there, which was, again, a problem property. Now, that same operation, who was going to probably leave Northeast, is doubled in size and doubled in employees, and made the property, new parking lot, new paint, the roof has already been replaced, but made it a viable part of the community, and also brought that business owner who lives in, I'm not sure exactly where he lives, but wherever he lives, brought that into the community of Northeast as a participating and active member. And then, the building that they were in, not to leave that undone, they said, okay, we want to still make this happen, helped us find another operation that didn't need parking, who in turn bought the building and opened up a business there and again added some more jobs. So another house that I can think of, there was a house on in the Jackson Park neighborhood right across the street from the park that was a rental property and in very rough shape. Had a lot of police calls, if I understand it right. I assume what the calls were, but they actually broke down the doors and went inside, so, probably whatever it was, I don't know, I didn't call the police and ask them. But they took that property, completely rehabbed it. I don't think they used any money from the budget. I think it was all private donations and groups that put it together, and now it's rented out to, I think it's a duplex, an upper and a lower, and to do to some people. So what prompted me to spend my day here today, to trade my day today for this, was I think it makes a difference. The tax dollars that are spent here, that's spent on this program, go straight to a neighborhood, and the neighborhood then leverages that. They twist arm, they come to people like me and say, hey, come and work and do business in this neighborhood, and they go to the renters and the homeowners and the businesses that locate their actual businesses there, and they say, hey, let's make our neighborhood a better place. Let's all work together and make it happen. We had a kind of an open house at that house. I shouldn't say we. It was Kurt Nowoski. I had an open house at that house that I talked about across from Edison. And I came down and visited, and they had a steady stream of people there. Hundreds and hundreds of people came to this open house to meet this family, for one, and to see the difference. It was incredible. I mean, it just didn't stop. It was, I think it started early afternoon and early evening. I was still there when I left, and it just never quit. And I've never before seen that fervent of neighborhood involvement in all the things that I've done. Never seen it. It's completely unexpected. So
thank you for that.
I'm trading my day today to tell you about it. So now I'm going to give it to you and have you take it from there.
Great. Well, we appreciate that, Mr. Chusay. And welcome. You have one more testifier, right? Is that Russell Park? Welcome. No problem.
I will be brief.
No problem. We want to hear from the city, and we want to hear from our house research staff, because we really have not, and this has nothing to do with you, we still have not focused on taxes, which is why we're really hearing it. So we do want to get to the tax and the tax part, and so we want to leave time for that. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Clark, and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Reich. I'm a volunteer at Wyndham Park Neighborhood, where I live in northeast Minneapolis, and as Ron has indicated, I also work for the Holland Neighbor Improvement Association, which is across the boundary from where I live. It's also the community in which I grew up in, and it's home to the high school that he mentioned I graduated from. So I have a personal connection, and through this program I also have a professional connection as well. Not to get into or elaborate too many more of the details that Ron and others have shared with you, I think you can find hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories where you see the same thing in operation throughout Minneapolis with this program. You'll hear it time and time again. Leveraging, partnerships, community building. What does that really mean here today? I think it's the bottom line. That's the magic, the ghost in the machine. How they can take the program and say, here's your dollars, here's what you have to achieve. Take housing, for example. It was mandated by the legislature back when this program stated that slightly over half would go to housing. Well, the estimate at the time, the city's estimate, and I believe the framers of this bill at the time estimated that there's a $3 billion infrastructure issue that was facing Minneapolis, as projected at that time, and using not only Minneapolis as the study, but other urban cores as well. We were trending very negatively, and I think the state as a whole saw liability in the making of a magnitude that we talked about today, Detroit, East St. Louis, etc. And the program was designed to forestall that. However, even though it identified a $3 billion problem, it said we only have $400 million to allocate over 20 years.
So by design, by necessity, the program has had to leverage extra resources. It had to stretch those tax dollars to make the program work, to make our end of the deal happen. And as you've heard from other testifiers, programmatically, project-based, we have met many of those goals. We still have a lot of work to be done in many of the communities. The design of the program is very intentional. Some areas you protect. It doesn't take much for what was once a great neighborhood to become a problem neighborhood. Some areas you revitalize. Showing negative indicators, they need some other investment. The Phillips neighborhood is a good example of redirection. The investment is probably going to be more ongoing, more significant, and the program in every stage of the game takes a little bit and does a lot. And I think the testimony to date, I think, underscores that. I think also, the house that he mentioned, he said, I don't know how much money was put into it. It's kind of interesting. It's a tale of two homes. A standard house was being redeveloped down the block at the same time that this was being redeveloped through the program. And not to make a bad comparison, I think there are reasons why there is this comparison. We spent $5,000 of tax money. Everything else was leveraged. The other house used all public money, and that was $60,000. They did a good job. We did a good job. Both homes are now stable and now have families living in them. We did it in 3 months. They did it in 6 months. Time is money. So I think the bottom line is that the program, unless you think the need isn't there, and I think the foreclosure situation and other indicators, the need is still there. How can the state, which has an interest in the health of the city, afford not to use this program, which has proven itself to be rather cost effective? And I think that's, in a nutshell, the appeal that we try to make. And it's certainly how I run my program, and it's certainly the expectation of residents to stretch those dollars, and I think that's a value that's shared by this body as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Okay, so I don't know if the city of Minneapolis is here. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Betsy Hodges. I am on the Minneapolis City Council and chair of our Intergovernmental Relations Committee, as well as a member of our Ways and Means Budget Committee. And I'm joined this evening by Jack Crist, who is a member of our finance staff and available to answer specific questions about the fiscal situation at the city and our proposal tonight. And I won't elaborate on the testimony of the residents and neighbors about the value of the NRP program. I appreciate that they were here tonight and making a case for the program. I came out of my own neighborhood association with NRP, and I share the understanding of its value along with the city council. And that's part of the reason that we took the action I'm about to put forward to you. We know that we have a relatively unusual or large request before you. And I appreciate Representative Clark as well for bringing forward a bill raising these issues. And I'm here tonight to represent the official position of the City of Minneapolis regarding the tax issue in particular. And you should have copies being brought before you of the resolution that we as a City Council have passed. The main provisions of which are to request an extension of the pre-79 tax district in the common project in the city of Minneapolis. $100 million of that would go to support the NRP, which you have heard about this evening, and $100 million of that would go to support debt and other needs at the Target Center, which is one of our bonding requests this year that did not get very far, but it is a state and regional facility of great significance and importance, not least of which because it is the home of the Minnesota Timberwolves. And so we're looking for some assistance, we're looking to get some relief from that debt by extending these tax increment districts. There are some other provisions here as well. Those are the main two. And I am happy to answer any questions you may have. And again, Mr. Crist is here to answer questions as well.
Thank you, Ms. Hodges. Right? Hodges?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Crist, welcome.
Thank you.
Do you have testimony for us? No.
No, I really
You're just here for questions.
I'm just here for questions.
Okay, we're going to get to that. We can do whatever committee members want. I think it's probably the best use of time is to first hear how this bill would affect Allegheny and fiscal disparities, but if we want to, you know, ask the neighbors and the city council members questions first and then hear from House Research, I mean, I guess I'd look at Representative Mullery and Representative Dabney as Minneapolis legislators to tell us how they'd like to proceed. Nope, you don't care? Well, I think...
I guess if we've got so many people here, if there are questions, why don't we start with that and let people flesh out and better understand the program and the leverage.
I have to tell you, I was trying to stay away from the program. We took 35 minutes of testimony on that.
And well, I could defer to the witness of the chair. Either works for me.
Just so people know, so people understand what's going on here. Many of you I recognize, and you know we had a hearing on this for 2 hours last year, and we heard a lot of the same testimony, and we're the same people. So I hope you remember that. There's been no election in between. We are the same legislators on this committee. And the local government committee heard it a couple weeks ago or so, and I heard your testimony then too. Not everybody sits on that committee, but that chair was attempting to deal with the local governance structure issue and kind of it's a good cause and, you know, we'd like funding for it. This committee really has to deal with, this is a cold-hearted, mean committee that deals with not is your cause good, it's how are you going to pay for it and who are you going to make pay for it. So the tax issues really in this committee revolve around the fact that it isn't just Minneapolis revenue that's in play, it's across the state. So that's why it becomes a bigger issue for everybody around this table. So we can certainly proceed however you want. I think the House research folks could lay out for maybe some of the testifiers why this is not just a Minneapolis bill, although it feels like it. I certainly understand that. But fiscal disparities and local government aid, which affects every member in this body, is part of how this program is being paid for. So, Representative Mullery.
Well, Madam Chair, I think some of the committee are cold-hearted and mean, and others aren't.
Well, I think with that, because I do want to be able to interact with everybody, I think all the members do, and I do want to ask very specific questions of the city of Minneapolis. I think the best thing really is to hear from Ms. Dalton, to get members to get a better understanding, and all of you, as to what is really going on with fiscal disparities and local government aid. Because many people think when there's a TIF district in their city, it's only about their city. And that's just not the case. Fiscal disparities is 7-county metro, and then it also buys down LGA for the rest of the state. So it is all 134 members are affected by these kind of provisions, but that's often not, you know, that would not be something that folks who are working in these NRP groups would know necessarily about or even care about. But it is this committee that has to care about it. Layered on top of that is this issue of these pre-79 TIF districts, which are clocking off around the state, and everybody else's cities as they're coming and decertifying is not getting to extend them. And so that would be, you know, something quite incredible to see done. I just want to be real honest with you about that. You know, I think there's the $100 million, $120 deficit question that people are saying, well, we thought we'd get $400 and we're only getting $280. But everyone here should know that that is the case for every city in the state. When the 2001 property tax reform took place, it affected every single TIF district in the state in the exact same way. And on top of that, these pre-79 TIF districts already had sort of super benefits, which they didn't have to contribute to fiscal disparities, and had other sorts of rules that have been illegal for 20-plus years. So I just, you know, that's the context of what the tax committee has to think about, setting aside the good works of all the neighborhoods. And I that does seem cold-hearted, but that is what this committee has to grapple with. So I would like to ask either Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael to walk us through the handouts. All of you should have them. They're in the back for the public as well, I believe. So if you want to see them, they should be on the back bench there.
Are they back there?
Yeah. Okay, so there's two forms. One talks about LGA for TIF districts and one. Well, I'll let Ms. Dalton walk through it, but for neighbors who want to see what we're looking at here, it's all in the back for the public. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the first printout I'm going to talk about has a cover sheet, and at the top it says run LGA TIF 1, and it's comparison of effects of pre-79 TIF decertifications on a fully phased in LGA distribution.
Okay, Ms. Dalton, if I may, which one is this one?
Looks like,
so if you're following along in the public, it's about 28 pages long. It looks like this. And once you look at it, you'll see why it's affecting, this bill affects all of the state of Minnesota.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Ms. Elm. Madam Chair, it's in your packet. In your green folder.
Yeah, which one is it? What does it look like again? Where does it stand on?
LZA run. Okay, it was just in the front, I guess. Not in the green folder.
Comparison of effects of pre-1979.
That's it? And
got
it's 25
it.
Pages, excuse me, 25 pages.
I'm from rural Minnesota. Sometimes we gotta talk a little slower, move a little slower. But I catch up.
Very funny. We're not falling for that. Here's Dalton. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the first thing I want to say is this is not actually showing what will happen in 2012 when the district is fully decertified and all of the effects of all the TIF pre-1979 TIF decertifications have played through the entire system. The reason is trying to project LZA 4 years into the future, given all the other factors that are going to change, is really, really difficult. I do know that there is some work that's been done by the city of Minneapolis that actually did try to do this through 2011, and I've talked to the person who worked on that, and they've got a number between $8.7 million and $10 million. They use reasonable assumptions, but that's not what this is going to show. So I just want you to understand that this number will be different than what was presented in the Senate, but they're two different things, and mainly it's because I didn't want to try to project everything that's going to happen in everything else, in tax bases and levies and population growth between now and 2012.
So you're not including Representative Marquardt's LDA proposal this year? Just kidding. But, I mean, I think it's a good point that all members know that all of the variables that go on in the LDA formula are not static. They're dynamic, and they're based on population. So trying to take a shot at what LDA might look like in the future is difficult at best.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, what this proposal does do is it looks at pay 2008 LGA. What would happen if, number one, everybody was totally on the formula in 2008 because there's also all these weird little caps in LGA. So this is assuming LGA is fully phased in 2008. If all of these pre-1979 TIF districts were decertified at this point right now, as they're going to be required to be under current law, what's the impact? And so if you turn to page one, the first column shows what LGA would be if all the pre-1979 TIF districts were decertified. And there's $52 million of tax base in all of the pre-1979 TIF districts in the state. $31 million of it is in Minneapolis. The second column shows what would happen if no pre-1979 TIF districts were decertified, if all of them continued. This is very close to current law. This is pretty close to what people are getting right now. So you can see that Minneapolis, with the decertifications of all of them, are essentially going to lose $5.8 million in LGA if all of the TIF districts were decertified. And that's column three. Column four shows what would happen to LGA if all of the pre-1979 TIF districts were decertified except for the Minneapolis districts. So this would be essentially modeling what would happen if this bill passed right now and went into effect right now. And in that case, Minneapolis would essentially be getting actually a little bit more than they get without any decertification, because they are going to gain a little bit of money from the decertifications in other districts because of the fiscal disparities pool in the metropolitan area. So that's what these show. If there is a negative number in column five, it's showing the amount of aid lost to that city if Minneapolis is allowed to keep their pre-1979 TIF district without decertifying it. Of that $6.5 million that Minneapolis would get to keep, about $4.5 million of it would be losses in LGA to outstate Minnesota cities, with the remainder going to essentially the suburbs.
And I'm actually going to let Mr. Hines talk a little bit about fiscal disparities, which is the other printout.
Okay, so if I may, before we jump to that, so that people here in the audience can really understand the financial part, because I know folks maybe really aren't here for that, but if column 5 shows that if this bill were to pass, all these other cities lose something. Okay, so that's, so you can see, complicated, but it isn't just a Minneapolis provision. It's because fiscal disparities now comes in, which spreads tax relief across the metro, which therefore makes LDA less expensive around the state. So that's really the column to look at on this bill. And I just want you to understand that, so not to be cold-hearted, but to be honest about the tax implications of this bill. And I think part of the problem is we've really never gotten to that yet in the legislature. I think we all knew that this didn't have to be dealt with till this year, and maybe not even till next. So I think the legislature's done what it does as well, is put problems off until it has to deal with them. And I think this may be the first time some of the neighborhoods are understanding why other legislators across the 7-county metro and across greater Minnesota would not maybe be so excited about this bill. So I want you to see what they see as they look at the bill, so we can understand. It's not about the good causes here, and it's a hard message for me to deliver as a chair, because I've watched other previous tax chairs try to deliver it in a much softer way, and I think it's sort of been a disservice. And you're not alone in this, because I have a pre-79 district in my city. I have 3 of them. They are throughout the state, and other folks have not been allowed this benefit. And we've got St. Paul, and I think next week is going to ask for the same thing. So it becomes a state tax policy question for this committee to grapple with. So, Mr. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to kind of let the group in the audience kind of know how this does affect people and affect rural cities. I just went through and just roughed off the numbers on 14 small cities that I represent with populations of 57 to 4,800. This is over $50,000 to those 14 cities. So when you talk the dollars, it's real money to every city throughout the state that's involved with the LGA. So for information.
Thank you for that, Justin Simpson. And I think we should hear from Mr. Hines. I don't want everyone to lose heart here in the room. I just want everyone to think about this, that this problem is a lot more complicated than a lot of people think it is, including this committee, who has not really had to finesse this, because what we've been doing is this pre-79s are decertifying. We're letting them decertify. They are coming on and paying the taxes as they should be, and are forgoing a 30-year corporate subsidy, which this committee has been also trying to eliminate. So it's complicated for all of us, and it's not a partisan issue. It becomes a tax fairness issue. So, Mr. Hines, oh, Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and this is just really for the members of the audience who may not be aware of how exactly the LGA formula works. The reason that there is shifting of LGA, of local government aid, between cities due to this is because there is a set appropriation. And so if one city's tax base goes up or down, that changes the distribution of LGA not only to that city but to all the other cities, because you have to stay within that set appropriation amount.
Thank you for that. Mr. Hines, now we're going to do fiscal disparities, is that right?
Yeah, Madam Chair, yes. Now we're going to talk about the second printout that's in your folder, which at the top, and this is a much shorter printout. It's only about 5 pages, I believe. And it says at the top, change in net tax capacity due to pre-79 TIF decertifications in the metro area. So that's why it's short. It's only the metro. There's no cover sheet for this one, and it's simply a 5-page printout that I think most of you have found it, at least. And what this printout is showing then is column 1, net tax capacity, as everyone is aware, is the technical term for your tax base. The tax base that's the basis for the property tax in Minnesota's property tax system. So the 2001 net tax capacity is really the one in the current tax capacity. It really means pay 2008. Column 2 then shows the net tax capacity that's in the pre-79 TIF districts, and Pat alluded to the fact that there's about $31 million in $31 plus million in Minneapolis, which is certainly the biggest share of the total, $48 million in the entire metro, and then there's only another $4 or $5 million outstate. Column three, and you can see that that most cities do not have 379 TIF districts, but there's certainly a smattering of them that do. Column three shows them the addition to the tax capacity of each city if the TIF districts all decertify, all the 379s. And you might wonder why there's numbers showing up in every line when most of them don't have 379 TIF districts, and that is because of the fiscal disparities effect. So to the extent that the 379 TIF district property includes some commercial industrial property, those districts are presently exempt from participating in the fiscal disparities program. So that commercial industrial base is not shared throughout the metro area, as is all other commercial industrial property. So if that property becomes, once it's decertified, it presumably will be distributed through the fiscal disparities program, and each city will gain some tax base through fiscal disparities, as is shown in column three.
Mr. Hines, if I can interrupt you, I apologize. I just want everybody, because I can see lots of people like nodding and tracking this. This is great. We wish we could get the rest of our colleagues going on the tax committee to try to track this. The third column really shows you with your city that doesn't get LGA, which there's a whole bunch who don't, you still benefit if this bill doesn't pass. Because you can now see in the third column what tax base you pick up, how your net tax capacity grows. So it's not just cities that are recipients of aids and credits who might have an issue with this bill. It'd be even those cities who are not recipients of aids and credits, because they're in the metro, they're in this fiscal disparities recalculation. So these are just all layers to think about as we try to solve this problem. Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, just to look at Minneapolis's number then in column three, while they have $31 million in tax capacity, they show $27.4 million in column three, which reflects the fact that some of that $31 million is commercial industrial that they would contribute to the pool. So that's one of the reasons why it's less than $31 million. It also picks up the fact that Minneapolis will get more back from the fiscal disparities pool, as will all the other cities. So that effect to get from the 31 to the 27 is the amount they lose, the net loss of the fiscal disparities pool, but it's important to remember they put some in and they get some back. Column 5 now is similar to the way the LGA run was set up, then shows what does tax capacity do if Minneapolis, if this bill were to pass, Minneapolis did not, TIF districts did not decertify. And here you'll see, again, everybody still gained some tax base because the other pre-79 districts in the metro area presumably would still contribute to fiscal disparities, and that amount would be distributed throughout the metro area. You'll notice that the numbers are a fair amount smaller in column 5 than they were in column 3, because Minneapolis is such a large part of the whole amount. Notice that Minneapolis, for instance, gets about $500,000 back in additional tax capacity if they didn't decertify, which is what it's gaining from the distribution from the other cities that do decertify.
Thank you.
Everybody got it?
That's a lot. Okay, so questions for either Mr. Hines or Ms. Dalton, from members first, and kind of try to understand what we're all looking at. Let's send our heart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do I understand that this bill doesn't pass, that every one of us, or maybe I'm saying that the wrong way, every one of us in the state is going to be supporting the neighborhood revitalization programs? Am I saying that the wrong way?
Representative Earhart, you're saying if the bill passes or doesn't pass, which one are you asking?
I think I should ask if it does pass.
If it does pass?
If it doesn't pass.
If it doesn't pass, pretty much every other city in the state is better off financially. Just financially, not on the good works.
Okay.
Just financially. And Minneapolis is not alone in this, and the NRP neighborhoods. St. Paul is going to come on in next week and ask us to forgive them. They're pre-70 in the next line. You can see it right under there. they want to extend their for River Center. And then we've got a bunch of cities. Mine have just turned off. And I guess part of the equity issue in here is if you were a pre-79 and then you clocked out and you didn't get to be extended, how do you compensate those cities who then came in and paid into fiscal disparities and paid into the tax base for the whole state?
Representative Clark is carrying this, and I would think she'd be in favor of her neighborhood revitalization program. So right. Why would she want to pass this bill? Right?
Oh, no. It helps. Her bill helps Minneapolis. It helps these neighborhoods because they're trying to, what's on their heart. And Representative Moore and I talked about this, and maybe Mr. Michael can tell us this. You know, I don't know if he's been able to find definitively if the $400 million number was codified in statute. I went and asked Mr. Michael if he knew, but my understanding, and Representative Clark can jump in here and help us, is back when folks were coming up with this, which was, you know, a long time ago, these are pre-79 TIF districts, the goal was to raise $400 million for these folks to spend in their neighborhoods. We can argue about whether those people were thinking through good tax policy at the time. I mean, I think a lot of us around here would think that probably wasn't the right way to come up with a revenue source. But I think what they're here arguing now is, and I can't make the argument for them, but because of other things going on in the Minnesota tax code, like the enactment of the state general levy, which took the schools out of the TIF, their receipts of $400 turned into $280, and they're trying to get the other $110 out of it. Now, folks here should know that that is also the case for everybody else in the state. It's not just uniquely this city. And so I think Representative Clark is trying to say, let's just keep going for a while because we haven't got all the money out of it that we wanted. I'll let Representative Clark, answer if she thinks that's a fair characteristic.
Well, there's a couple things.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a commitment made in statute. I'd just like to bring people back a little bit to why this wasn't actually a very good tax investment. And I have to disagree respectfully with my chairwoman. Because the city was deteriorating. We were losing tax base for the whole state. There's no question that Minneapolis is going down out in our neighborhoods. And some of you were here, and we actually had something called the Year of the City, where we took people from the whole state to one evening into the, of the downtown zone of the village, into the city. And we said, look at us. See what we're doing here? We're trying to pull ourselves up. If you can invest in us this year, if you can invest in us to help us get some tools we need that will really help the neighborhoods revitalize themselves, really more than make up that back to the state. In a number of ways. We told this a little bit earlier, I think, with some of the putting houses back on the tax roll and businesses and creating jobs and all of that, the pay taxes, all that. In addition, we're in some parts of our city still have problems with being a magnet for crime, the cost money. You have kids with big dropout rates unless there's things happening in the NRP program and helping them get out to school programs and things like that. So just a very quick overview, we feel like we have really helped the tax base of the whole state by this ongoing reinvestment, I guess I'd say, and allowing the district to if we could continue to have it be extended. So part of it, maybe just to say, is this really, we feel, was a commitment that we would like to see kept. And I think the folks who went out, I'm trying to think, Jimmy Reed and a few other people were around then when that event happened, and it was quite significant, and I have to say, I'm sure that there was a kind of a change of heart that happened where people thought, like, okay, this isn't just the city against the rural or the city against the suburban or the suburban, against the city. And it was really a connecting, a really connecting and understanding how we invest in each other. It really helped all of us. And that was, I don't know, these are the kind of days that I kind of yearn for now, some of that kind of understanding. But anyway, I just wanted to say that's why, we want to continue this. And I think Representative Moore wanted to say something that so maybe he could speak, and then I was hoping I could bring up one of our folks to help us talk a little bit more, I think, just right to the tip issue. I'm not sure that what we have before us here is the best, strategy to keep going with what we're trying to do. Maybe there's some adjustments that need to be made, and I've talked a little bit with the chairman about this today. Maybe there's some other ways that we could work on this. This just begins to be the first step of understanding what we might
want to do to continue this kind of investment. There might be some changes around that we should do so that people can really understand how they are, you know, reinvesting and how it would be, you know, equitable and so on. So, but I think our yield
I wasn't going to interrupt Representative Mullery. The author, so Representative Mullery, then Demmer, then Simpson, Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I'll just go over a couple things before getting into the question that was more direct than what I was going to say to. We had quite a, you might say, heated argument this afternoon in the retiring room, the chair and I, over this issue. Representative Clark brought up the name of Bernie Leader, and it's interesting because last year I was taking him over to eat at the Black Forest, which is in her Representative Clark's district, and out of the blue, he said, we're just driving through the city, and he said to me, and he just said, you know, you really do need that NRP program here, and that's an area of the city that if I took you to the north side, certain places where the over half of the houses are knocked down and the half of the others are boarded up, I don't know what he'd say then. But I'm still trying to get through to certain people in the room that there is a difference here, because there was a pretty... I agree you can't find future legislatures, but we do often follow that in many cases. And there was a commitment to the $400 million, and I think the people, my understanding from Minneapolis, NRP, and others, are not asking for what you say everybody's asking for, which is to be made whole on it. They're asking for the commitment to that $400 million. After that's reached, they're not asking for anything else, so they're asking for the state to keep its commitment. And I remember that there was language to that, and I don't think it's in statutes. I think it's in the laws of 1991 or 1990, and it was, as I recall, an amendment from my predecessor that put it into the law of that.
And Representative Mullery, you're usually right about these things, so I'm sure it's there. No, and I mean, seriously, he is, because he's got a very good memory about what's been codified, and I sprung it on Mr. Michael when we got here to see if he could find it in the general law, but you're right, and so we don't know for sure, but I'm sure Mr. Michael can get us to us, you know, not tonight, but in general, when you pull these things, like I remember this thing, Representative Earhart has that same uncanny quality, just remembering some unique piece of tax law, and so, you know, I'm sure you're right.
Madam Chair, it's in a stack of NRP folders that would run from the end of the table to about where Representative Simpson's two drawers up in my file cabinet. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but it was actually, I believe, Mr. Michael that helped me find it a few years ago, and that was when there was an issue with the city on it.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I do, we have Demmer, Simpson, and Marquardt. But I do want to understand what's in this bill a little bit better. My understanding is it's not the old NRP. It's also half the money going to the city, and it's going to help pay for Target. So it's not the old NRP, right? So I do want to understand that, too, and I think we need to understand exactly what's in this bill. And I heard what Representative Clark said, and it was with Representative Loeffler, who was here, and Representative Danby, and Representative Mullery, and it wasn't that heated. I mean, we had a healthy conversation, but I think everyone should know that the Minneapolis delegation is not going to let this go, and they're committed to finding a solution. I was really happy to hear that folks are trying to think of other ways, and I'm hoping you all as neighborhood leaders will help them, because it is a bigger issue than this bill at first blush appears to be. So I know that Representative Clark is not telling me that on behalf of all the Minneapolis delegation this is the exact bill, or that they might even not want this Target thing going on. Or, you know, I don't know all those pieces, and I know it's still being worked on, but I want to understand better at least what's in front of us. Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, just for clarification, I believe that, and then just reading it quick again, I believe the bill just deals with money for NRP, doesn't it? And the city gets half, and then is that...
And they'd like to give it to Target, is my understanding.
Target Center, is that...
So,
So the bill doesn't do the target standard, but I think the city wants to include
that. Yes, and maybe Representative Dabney looks like he wants to set some light on this. I mean, if I'm reading this right, the city of Minneapolis would support it if they get half and they can give us the target. I doubt NRP cares about that at all. But this bill directly, I think, is saying that unlike pre-79 TIF district where it went directly to NRP, now 50-50 would be broken up between the city and the neighborhoods, and I think that's the new tax piece in this particular bill. Understand this may not be the final bill. Representative Dabney?
Madam Chair, I think you've grasped there are really two. There's Representative Clark's bill that says everybody else but the city gets their money. The remaining increment is divided half to NRP, half to the city. The city's resolution says let's let everybody else have their money and then solve one problem, which is the lack of adequate planning by the legislature that has created a problem for both, actually, Minneapolis and St. Paul in terms of major entertainment venues, and push the Target Center onto the property tax, where I think we could agree it doesn't belong. Solve that problem and maintain strong neighborhood organizations through funding them with the other half of the increment.
So basically everyone, including the neighborhoods, the legislators, and the city, are all being very creative and have lots of ideas here.
And aren't done yet.
I get that. Okay, so back to Representative Mueller, then Demmer, Simpson, Marquardt.
Madam Chair, and I want to correct what I said before, because we had been over last year and before this came in this year talking about just making up the 400, and this is different from
And I've known you, Representative Mulery has known the nuances of all these bills for a long time. So, Representative Demmer, what are you thinking about all this?
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. You know, depending on when you call me, I have different thoughts. They're all over the place. This is complex. You know, from 50,000 feet, it's a zero-sum game. You know, if we take more to Minneapolis, everybody else comes down. If we let everybody decertify it all from Donnell, it changes the same. And, you know, so I was thinking about that earlier, and that's really what I was going to talk about to begin with. But then we got to start talking about, you know, the changes that came about because of the statewide property tax that affected LGA. And I started thinking about LGA programs that I'm familiar, and not LGA, I'm sorry, TIF. And I started thinking about the TIF programs because I come from rural Minnesota. And small towns, I mean, we don't have the large neighborhoods, but we have dilapidated falling down homes too with people who can't afford to do anything with them and trying to come up with programs. And, you know, LGA is helpful and tax increment financing has been helpful and something called small business development grants have been helpful and rural cities development grants, I should say, sometimes business, sometimes neighborhood. But I know in TIF in particular, in some of the communities, some of the small communities I represent, and I'm proud to say I think we used TIF the right way, Madam Chair. We didn't have whole towns become TIF districts. We had the feed mill with a TIF. And when it came off the TIF rolls, the tax rolls, the project got done, when it comes off TIF, the tax money comes in and it worked because we now have a big feed mill in town we didn't have before, and all we do is forego taxes for 7 or 12 years or whatever it was. And it worked right. But we had a lot of TIF districts that started out with upfront TIFs. In other words, you calculated out what the tax increase was going to be, and then that money was fronted to the company that was doing, or the community, or the neighborhood, whatever, and then the tax increment would pay off the loan, the upfront. Well, you know what happened, Madam Chair and members, and for those of you who don't know what happened, there were changes in the tax laws before those ran out, and there wasn't enough money to pay back the money that was fronted. And so you had cities, usually small towns, that would end up with $30,000, $50,000, $80,000, $150,000 worth of a TIF loan, but there's no more TIF to pay it, and the local taxpayers just had to pick that up. Result was we don't do that anymore. We have what we call pay as you go, which means you get the TIF increment as you go. The development or the property owner has to do it themselves, and that way if there's not enough TIF, because if we make changes to the TIF, to the property tax rules, and there's changes, the company itself then is short and has to pay the difference if it's not. So my point is, Madam Chair, is that while this program may have expected the $400,000 or whatever, I'm being very
you know, 35,000 feet maybe now. They may have expected that to be there, and because of changes, it wasn't all there. This was a statewide phenomenon, and there were lots of TIF districts throughout the state that ended up not having enough money because of changes in the statewide business property tax was a big part of it, I think, but other changes. And so it wasn't just this program that ended up getting shorted some funds. This happened throughout the state in proportion to their projects, but still it was large. So I think knowing that it's a zero-sum game, knowing that there's a given level of money and all we're doing is shifting around where it goes, you hit the nail right on the head, Madam Chair, about the complexity of this. And personally, I appreciate the chance to see this and to have a chance to think this through, because it really is a statewide thing. And I think we have to take it all into consideration as we understand that we're all affected the same way, and we can't just correct one problem at the expense of and have other people help pay for that. And so it has to be somehow balanced so that all places that maybe were shorted or whatever can either be helped, or we all just were shorted and then we're done with that and we move on to something else. So I just was trying to bring some perspective, Madam Chair, from where I come from and the things that we saw using tax increment financing and the effects of these changes. And so now if I've missed something along the way, I don't know, I'm being very general here, but that's kind of the way I see things and where I think that kind of the complexity of this lies in one group in a zero-sum game with one pot of money that doesn't change. I mean, we don't print money in Minnesota. We just rearrange it. And, you know, in the zero-sum game...
If you'd vote for a tax increase, we would print some money.
It's a zero-sum game, Madam Chair, because all you're doing is rearranging a tax increase for whom, Madam Chair? For whom?
The rich.
But
and we got to define that. And we got to define that. We're taken from one, giving to another. It's all zero-sum game.
And Representative Dem, I think you're right in the context of this bill, whether you're for bringing more revenue into the system like a bunch of us are or not. In this particular bill, that's not what's going on. There's no new money being brought in to buy off the adverse impacts on other cities.
If I could real quickly, in bringing in new revenue, I think you're talking about getting some money from somebody else is what we're talking about, Madam Chair, because that's what taxation is taking from one and giving to the other. It's a zero-sum game.
Thank you for that. Representative Simpson and Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of thoughts and comments, and Representative Clark probably would have the answer. The one thing I found interesting is that if we get this extra $120 million, we're going to continue the program, but then it's going to stop. So what makes it more unique to stop now or when the $120 million is gone? I mean, what's going to be different? What's going to make this program whole at that point or at this point? That's some question.
I don't know that will ever totally be done, but I think there's... you know, it's kind of almost like a tipping point. I mean, we got some momentum going right now and some skills. People have been skilled up. We have, as was pointed out earlier, we have neighborhood groups that have actually incorporated themselves and they're able to leverage a lot of dollars. And, you know, we want to keep going on in that regard for a period of time. We'll have to come up with some other ways, I guess, later. But for now, to drop something that's working seems like it would be pretty tough, and that we have a big crisis going on, a new crisis, I guess you'd say, or extended crisis with what's going on with the foreclosures, with unemployment. I mean, in some ways, the times that we're facing right now in our city are similar to when we first started this program. And it looks like my colleague here would like to maybe add to that.
Madam Chair, my name is Bob Miller. I'm the director of the neighborhood.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
Let me just respond a little bit to Representative Simpson's question and comment. One of the things about this program is that we have learned a lot as well. When neighborhoods first started, as one of the testifiers said before, there were 42 neighborhood organizations covering 63% of the population. Now we've got 100%, 72 organizations. But one of the things that we did in the beginning was that we were consulted by some very good professional staff to provide grants to folks on our loans, on our home improvement products. And that's what we did in the beginning. But one of the things that we learned was that we could do something a little bit different. We could put together revolving loan programs. And in effect, take that dollar, instead of investing it once, which would be the case if we do a grant, we could return it back to the community and reinvest it one more time, or maybe two more times, or three more times. Now, we've started doing exactly that. We can use those dollars then for additional services going on in that community, so we can help support not just the organizations, but the things those organizations do. Somebody said to me, well, is that really that big of a deal? Well, right now, we have over $20 million that has been earned by doing that. Those neighborhood organizations are using that to continue the activities that are in the best interest of all of us and that are in this statute. If we have more time to continue to develop that system, then what happens is those dollars can continue to be revolved, they generate revenue, and we can then keep those activities going on into the future. Now, for how long? It can't go on indefinitely, but it can certainly go on for a number of years beyond the end of any program that would be initiated here.
Mr. Miller, I'm just asking staff here. I was listening very carefully. I did not know this was another thing that these pre-79s got to do, because no other TIF districts get to do what you just described. To set up a revolving fund.
Yeah. Yeah, Madam Chair, the statute didn't disallow it, and the neighborhoods, in effect, have been very good about using those revenues to continue to do exactly what's under the statute. The statute provides the types of investments that they can make.
Please, Mr. Miller, I'm not saying in any way that the NRP in Minneapolis is not following the rules. You've clearly got another benefit in the original NRP legislation that I had not even heard of until this moment. That does not, no one else qualifies for it. But I didn't mean to in any way say you were doing something you shouldn't be. I just was shocked anyone could. So, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, I just want to point out that that's one of the things about this program has been that we have tried to foster the creativity of the neighborhoods to do many of the things that we have all said we needed to have done here. And if we talk, you know, Representative Mulry was talking about what happened with his visit to Nicollet Avenue. Well, Nicollet Avenue was going to be a mill and overlay. 24% of the storefronts on Nicollet Avenue were vacant in 1991. There was prostitution going on down there, and there was a lot of drug dealing. You couldn't find people to invest in those businesses. One neighborhood, Stevens Square, came up with $350,000 of their NRP plan to invest in that street. It became an $8.5 million project. Now, the benefit to it wasn't just that the street got done. It was the fact that we now have about 4% vacancy on those buildings on there, and we have kept that vacancy for all these years, which means all those employees who pay state income tax, it's all those properties which pay property taxes, are productive. And one of the things about the analysis that you've provided, and I think this is excellent, one of the things about this analysis that it doesn't show is what happens if that tax base goes down. What happens if instead of $410 million in 2007 net capacity, we're at $385 million? And what happens to all those other jurisdictions at that point in time, because Minneapolis will need more support?
I think that's an important point to raise. I think that's a good segue to separate again the good causes from the tax policy. Maybe Representative Marquardt, I know, has been waiting. But what happens is the city gets more LGA. So that is the role of LGA. If net tax capacity drops, you become relatively poorer than every other city, and you get more LGA. I think the crux of the issue for NRP is you just want money. I get it. I mean, that's what everybody wants. You need a bucket of money to do these good deeds. It's trying to find the money. And in this case, it's kind of a double whammy because it's coming from others. It's the net. It's the zero-sum game. It's not like this is a bill to bring a tax increase of $120 million in the income tax to pay for this program. You understand what I'm saying? So trying to separate the good works of it, we're still at the position where we don't have any new money to keep something going. So as you get poorer and those values are dropping around the whole state, I mean, you may be tracking that. The LGA will swirl around again, and the fiscal disparities to swing into place and give more money to folks in more need. So that is, you know, that's how it would work. Representative Clark.
Can I just ask you, though, it seems like when you're talking about tax capacity, I don't think these figures take into consideration what we were talking about here, like we have more people paying income tax because they're working. We have more properties generating property tax because they're no longer just a drain on the...
The property tax is measured.
Yeah. So that's it. So what about the income tax? What about the lack of crime
You know, I mean, we, you know, it costs anywhere from $40,000 to $80,000 to put one of those people that are on our street causing a problem into prison, just to keep them there. I mean, that's not even all the other. So I'm just thinking this cost, but there's also like the increased tax capacity that I guess probably isn't measured if you think about the taxes that are being paid by the individuals who are working and by the businesses. So I don't know if this committee looks at that in some way or you have the capacity to do that. It just seems like it's a missing number.
Ms. Dalton, you want to take a shot at that?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, staff does not do dynamic modeling. We have to assume that everything else remains constant. We just don't have the capabilities to say what would happen if we do this, how that would impact throughout the entire economy.
Okay, I think I understand that you're saying into the future, but what about even accounting for, if we were to go back and somehow be able to link, for example, let's say East Street, we were just talking about what we call East Street, this is very Nicollet Avenue. I mean, that's tripled, really, and I can think of this in my own district. There's East Street, and there's Lake Street, and there's Nicollet Avenue, all have been revitalized. I bet you we could figure out a way to go back and quantify the taxes that have been paid, increased in income tax, increased in... I don't know if anybody's doing that. I mean, would that be useful to this committee to try to go back and understand, like, what have we generated in terms of this project for the tax base that has to do with the new jobs or the... even not even think of the avoidance of costs, but the tax that are paid by new businesses and new jobs.
Well, Ms. Dalton can take... We would have to do that for the whole state, though, because, again, this is the same pot, and every city council and every local neighborhood organizations are making decisions either with funds like this or other funds that reduce crime, improve neighborhoods, you know, whatever, and people are using different ways, so we'd have to measure the whole state and compare that, and that's really not what this committee does. But Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, I think you pretty much stated what I was going to point out, which is there are benefits to where the money is currently spent, but there are also opportunity costs to making the choice to spend that money the way it was spent. So not only must you measure the benefits of what happened for spending it there, but you also have to measure the opportunity costs of not spending it someplace else if you're going to do a complete analysis. And I guarantee that is far beyond our capabilities.
Representative Marquardt, you've been waiting forever.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the discussion on this. Could I ask Councilmember Hodges and some zero in a little bit on the finance.
Mr. Chris can join you as well, because maybe when Representative Marquardt's done, we can understand how Target is intersecting in this. It's not in Representative Clark's bill, but we're understanding that what Representative Clark's got is half the money going to the city now, which would be different.
Yeah.
So.
Councilmember Hodges, Madam Chair, on the resolution,
yes, sir.
On the second page, you've got some numbers there. And it's $100 million to the NRP, $100 million to the city, and then part three. Now, that's, I presume, over the next 10 years. 10 years of the lifetime of the extension. Is that correct? Those
yes,
numbers?
It could be. I mean, those are the numbers, Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt. Those are the numbers that people have been discussing. But I think actually the intention of putting specific numbers in there was to allow the districts to sunset as soon as the obligation was met, so that there wasn't a requirement for 10 years. If the obligation was met after 5 or 7, it could sunset as quickly as possible.
Councilmember Marquardt.
Councilmember Hodges, are those dollars with the dollars be coming from the city or the city and the county? Because I see the county up there. Because, you know, if I look at a $31 million tax capacity, and I don't have my book down here tonight, but I presume your tax rate probably city tax 40% range, something like that. I mean, that brings in about...
Chris, rest on Mark, maybe Mr. Chris could tell us the city of Minneapolis' tax rate.
The numbers that were in the represented the numbers that were in the resolution were different. The numbers that were in the resolution presumed that the district would not be decertified and the city would continue to collect the full amount of tax increments, which differs from
Representative Clark's bill, where the increment is declared excess and then distributed by the counties, and the amount coming to the city is only the city's prorated share of the increment.
Representative Marquardt, I think, thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Dalton said the tax rate in Minneapolis is 56%. So that, I mean, off of $31 million, that brings in, you know, roughly $17 or $18 million a year. And you times that by 10, that's giving you $170 million. So it's not even getting to the $200 million that's listed here. I mean, I guess how did you come to these numbers? And then on number three, is there going to be dollars you expect to be left over? And I guess my ultimate question to move this along is, why don't you, I mean, if it's going to be $17 million or $10 million a year, why don't you fund that out of the tax levy? Why don't you fund that out of your budget? Because what you're going to see is an increase of $17 million a year at the same tax rate that would come in. Why don't, I mean, I don't see why we can't be funding the NRPs. I know back when I was looking at things, when I was mayor in Dilworth, that the NRP program is a real example out there of community-driven ways in which you improve neighborhoods. And I remember we had neighborhood associations in a small city like Dilworth, and I remember reading all about that. So I think it's a great program, but I think everyone agrees that why can't we just fund it out of the tax levy? So Councilmember Hodges or Mr. Chris,
Madam Chair,
I think the difference is probably they're picking up the county taxes by keeping them in the TIF. Councilmember Hodges, ALGA and not JNFB. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, to the first part of your question about county involvement, we made some assumptions, some financial assumptions moving forward about what the district would yield, what portion of that would be the city's portion, what portion of that would be the county's portion. It is not clear to us, and part of our resolution asks for the county to be clear about whether they want to be a fiscal participant in the NRP program. As part of our resolution, there are some differences between our resolution and Representative Clark's bill. That question has not been answered by the county, and so that would make a difference in answering your question about how much per year the TIF districts would yield for NRP, and that's why it's somewhat of an open question here. One of the challenges, to get to your second question about simply levying, simply using property tax dollars for the NRP, is that one of the things at least the city has been looking for is a discrete and knowable source of funding for the NRP that didn't mix it in and put it in direct competition with police dollars and street dollars and fire dollars, which is what that would do. Which was what the levy would do. Now, and so that it would be, that there would be some sort of separation and some sort of clarity for the neighborhoods about those dollars. That being said, the NRP program has done a great deal for public safety and for infrastructure needs in the city. I don't want to imply that those things aren't related. But there's the demands, I think you all have known more than any other the challenges that the current fiscal situation at the state level regarding LGA and property tax reform has had on local governments, and I think you understand the challenge that's been for Minneapolis in particular.
Madam Chair,
Madam Chair, just to the first part of your question, I was perversely pleased to find out that House staff was wrestling the same problems that we were in dealing with the variables and trying to project the amount of increment that would be available. I think there was from my understanding, our methodology wound up to be essentially the same, but we did attempt, instead of trying to build on the 2008 numbers and make assumptions about what the numbers would be, everything else being constant, we did in fact try to project ahead to 2010 and 2000 and 11. And so therefore we came out with higher numbers for the amount of increment that would be generated by the pre-79 districts at that point in time. That's one of the...
So, Representative Marquardt and Mullery. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, again, I mean, I'd like to see this program continue, but I do think if it goes back on the tax rolls, you're making that decision. And I think it becomes even more transparent for the Minneapolis City Council to make these decisions to set their priorities. And by looking at the resolution and so forth, it looks like it would be a high priority. But I do have concerns when ultimately, if this goes out to 2019, that's 40 years that this land won't be on the tax rolls. And one thing we haven't talked about is that ups property taxes for everyone else in the city outside that tax increment financing district. Now, there's huge benefits, but I guess I think by putting it back on the tax rolls, it would increase the transparency of this program rather than knowing you've got, I mean, it'd be part of your overall priorities. And I think that's a, and taxpayers then have a little more say on all of that too. So I guess that's my comment.
Okay, Maury.
Well, Madam Chair, first of all, I'm getting worried now with Representative Marquardt in charge of our property tax committee, and he adds 20 and 10 and gets 40, and I'm a little worried about that.
Well, no, no, what's the 79 to 09 is
about the NRP.
Right, he was talking about the 5th district.
Okay.
Yes, I understand my confusion. Yeah.
Scared me.
Yeah, that would be scary if I'm property.
That's all the LPs no. Running.
Representative Mullery.
And I'm sure I. These runs were on total pre-79 Minneapolis 5th districts. Now, I believe, and I can't keep track because the bills change so much, and but I thought we were looking at, I know the original NRP was off of the common project.
Right.
Which is, I believe, 15 parcels of dozens and dozens of TIF districts. And so these are really, if we're talking still about the common project in this bill, which I thought the staff said, and maybe I'm mistaken about that.
I think, Representative Mullery, the just Minneapolis common project is column 4. I think everybody...
No,
well, let's have Ms. Dalton tell us again.
Madam Chair, I'm just talking to staff. They indicated that was all for Minneapolis.
Everything is certifying except Minneapolis continuing on.
No, Madam Chair, I believe that the column 4 takes into account all pre-79 Minneapolis districts, but that includes others than the common project. And I thought the bill was just for the common project, so there's a distinction.
Okay.
Isn't there?
Can we get this clear? So, Representative Mullery, just to understand your question, I think the all the certified part of 4 was outside of Minneapolis. Everything in the state decertifies, except Minneapolis does not decertify. And then I think the nuance of your question, if I'm understanding correctly, is you're saying, okay, so what do you call in Minneapolis? These 15 commons or other things that are in Minneapolis? Is that correct?
My question is whether or not the bill only continues the common project for this, and if so, then there's other pre-79 that would come on. So maybe maybe
Mr.
the bill
Michael.
Does not limit it to common project.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll answer what the bill does, and I think Mr. Chris can probably explain sort of the financing in Minneapolis. The bill says that all of the TIF districts in Minneapolis that qualify under the old grandfather rule will be extended, and that money will then, half of that money will go to NRP. Now, the common project is not, I think that you're right that that's not the same set of districts. There are some post-79 districts in that, and there may be some pre-79 districts that are not in the common project that were financing NRP, but if this bill were to pass, half of those increments would be used, would be available to be used for the NRP revenues. Mr. Crisp can better respond to
Mr. Michael, before we go to Mr. Crisp and Representative Mullery and Representative Dabney and the folks who are trying to figure this out now, because it's all going to matter. So are you arguing then if the run did not assume everything, the effect would be smaller than is presented in column 4?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, got it.
Question.
I think that's right.
If the bill refers to the common project and that's not all 379, then the runs would not be...
Okay, and so to Mr. Crisp, and how many 379s are there beyond the common projects in Minneapolis?
Madam Chair, there are, I think, 42 districts in the common project.
Okay.
Of those, 15 are 379 districts. And I think to Representative Mullery's point, all of the 379 districts are within the common project. Okay, so they're just
379.
Okay. Then it would be.
The post 90 districts, the post 79 districts, that would be what I
think. And so for final clarification,
actually irrelevant to this discussion.
And I know some members just plain old have to go home, but a bunch of us have to grapple with this. So, you know, we have to figure this out, not tonight, but we have to understand what we're looking at. Just to further clarify this, then, so Ms. Dalton, is column 4 the subset of the 379s in Minneapolis or all the 379s in Minneapolis? I mean, all the...
Madam Chair, all of the 379 TIF districts in Minneapolis are all in the common project. It's just that the common project includes some post 1979.
Okay, so the column's right then. Rep them on.
Madam Chair, okay. Correct. And I had been told a different thing.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I understand if members have to go and, you know, but I think the reason we've spent more time on this bill this year than any bill in the Minnesota Legislature and the Tax Committee this year, and we did that last year too, I think with the exception of the Mall of America. And the reason this all matters is because River Center and the Mall of America and this project and all these things are swirling around about the same set of issues. And so once we set policy on what we're going to do with 379, which have never been extended before, then River Center wants it, the Mall of America wants to be exempt from 50 FD. We have lots of issues, you know, and I'm trying to just get Tax Committee members to understand that they're kind of all linked. And then you throw Target Center in there, and Representative Dabney's comment about if the Minnesota Legislature had funded it appropriately in the first place, you can see that this will be a bigger issue for all of us builders here, because we're going to deal with River Center and the Mall of America in the Tax Committee. Representative Earhart.
Well, I'm still looking at all the charts here, but I'm sure, what happens if they're all decertified? Does the city of Minneapolis get more or less LGA? I'm looking at the charts, I'm not sure I know.
Representative Barrett, we'll have staff walk through it again. I think the shorthand is, you know, not getting LGA is a measure of city wealth. So what you want to be, honestly, this is unpopular to say in front of a bunch of Minneapolis people, but you want to be Edina in Bloomington, where you don't get LGA. Because that means you're rich enough to not need it. So your goal as a city is to not get LGA. That's sort of like what you want to get to if you can. You don't want to be a recipient of aid, because that's just a measure of having not enough net tax capacity. So with these coming back on, Representative Earhart, my understanding is the city would lose a bunch of LGA. Now, this is the controversial part. I would say as they should, because they've become relatively wealthier. They have now put these properties back on the tax base, which they should. But Ms. Dalton can tell us exactly how much money would LGA lose, or would Minneapolis lose in LGA, because they will lose a lot of LGA. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, and I want to reiterate, this run does not say what will actually happen in 2012. This is saying what would happen if all of these were decertified right now. And if all TIF, pre-79 TIF districts were decertified right now, Minneapolis's LGA in 08 would have gone down $5.8
million. Okay. Representative Earhart.
I'm not sure that I had a different way of thought of it, but so
keep going.
I was just wondering if there isn't some way that the neighborhood groups and get taken care of out of the, I guess we were even talking about that, out of the money that the city raises rather than doing this affair.
I think that's what Representative Marquardt was suggesting, that if it's a city program, that the city values, the elected officials should fund it through the transparent property tax. I mean, I think that's kind of what he was trying to probably say in a little more diplomatic way. And I think none of us would care how Minneapolis would choose to use its money, but it has effects on everybody else. So that's why there is even a bill. If there was no effect, there wouldn't even be a bill here. The city council could just fund this program and still can. That's the choice of the mayor and Ms. Hodges and everyone else. If this program is not continued, they'll have to make that decision whether or not they're going to use their property tax.
If the tax capacity is there, it ought to be easy for them to raise the money that they would like to spend on these. No?
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, the amount of money, and Representative Hutt, the amount of money they would lose is approximately 80% of their lost tax base times the average city tax rate, which is about 32%. Now, Minneapolis's city tax rate is actually 56%. So the amount that they would raise from this going on to their property taxes is 80%, you know, would be 100% of 56 times this $27 million. So they will actually raise more in levy than they're going to lose in LGA. Okay. But they are losing the increment, which is not part of the general fund.
Track all that, Representative Earhart.
The last sentence he said, repeat the last sentence.
And throw SD on top, too, because I think that was kind of...
Well, I think that, I mean, if you're the city council,
if you're the city council, it's a component of we're going to pay into FD, we're going to lose our LGA, but what do we get in tax base? And then there's a bunch of stuff going on.
And Representative Earhart, Minneapolis's general fund, between what they can raise in property taxes from this versus what they're going to lose in LGA, they will be better off. Their general fund. However, what they are losing in TIF money, which is outside the general fund, is significant. And they can talk about that.
Representative Dabney, I have you on here, but maybe, I don't know, Representative Earhart, were you done, or are you just completely confused? He's a Hennepin County legislator member, so he's tracking all this too. He's got to figure it out too.
I'm still diagramming the Sultan's last couple of paragraphs, so
it's complicated, and the neighborhoods want money to do good things, and we get that, but there's a lot of other things going on. Mr. Crisp.
Madam Chair, not to put too fine a point on the point that was just made, that also means, and maybe you were saying this in another way, but that also means that if the city were trying to levy to continue an NRP program, they're doing it precisely the time they'd also be needing to consider levy to cover the city services that need to be covered by the lost LGA.
That's right.
Thank you.
So I think, Mr. Crisp, we understand, and I think it's pretty obvious to committee members, I hope, why, if you live in Minneapolis or you represent Minneapolis, you would like to keep this program in one form or another, setting aside the local governance issues, which I think is an internal Minneapolis issue, but again, it's using resources from across the state. So,
Madam Chair, may I make one other point?
Mm-hmm.
Self-serving, but nonetheless true.
We do that all the time here.
Along with cold-heartedness?
Yes.
A lot of the discussion loses the point that you're not, this isn't a situation where you're eliminating the benefits of LGA to the rest of jurisdictions. You are deferring it, however, for whatever period of time the districts are extended. That can be viewed, I think, quite fairly as an investment. If you're making a 5-year or 10-year deferment, that tax base is, in fact, eventually going to devolve back to the formula.
And Mr. Chris, Ms. Hodges, Representative Clark, I don't disagree. The problem is it's coming at the expense of others who do not have similar treatment, who are decertifying, who are not getting extensions, and therefore the FD payments out to the rest of the folks across Seven County Metro are smaller than they would be, and therefore LGA is smaller than it would be unless we have, you know, new money thrown into the pot. So I understand the perspective you would have there. Ms. Hodges, did you have anything else you want to add from the city's perspective here?
The one distinction, thank you, Madam Chair, the one distinction about the city's position versus the bill that you have before you is the Target Center. Mm-hmm. In addition to the relationship with the county, is the Target Center debt reduction. And the debt reduction on the Target Center would also have an impact on the city's capacity to use its property tax dollars for services as opposed to debt service on the Target Center. Right now, our property tax, and Mr. Chris can speak more clearly and more precisely to this, but a significant percentage of the current yearly increase in property taxes that we levy goes to pay debt service. Much of that is for the Target Center. A great deal of that is also for pensions, which we have discussed in other places here at the legislature this year, but a chunk of that is also for the Target Center. So I think it was the interest of the City Council to use these dollars for the Target Center in order to free up our capacity to either provide property tax relief or provide services for the citizens, as well as, and in addition to, continuing the program of NRP, which is also value-added for the city and also provides services for the residents of Minneapolis.
Ms. Hodges, is there anything in your resolution about fiscal disparities? I thought I had heard a position that the city of Minneapolis had taken that they were willing to sort of concede the FD payment as far as NRP. And I don't, is that true? Is it in the bill, Representative Clark? I don't see that.
Madam Chair, we do not have a position in this resolution about fiscal disparities.
Okay.
We do have a position on the use of fiscal disparities to fund the Mall of America project. And we understand that that, particularly regarding fiscal disparities and the extension of our TIF districts, creates some challenges moving forward, and we are willing to work on that, particularly regarding the fiscal disparities pool, because we object to the use of that from all of
America. So Minneapolis, I just assume, opposes the use of fiscal disparities for things like the Mall of America, right?
We are on record as opposing use of fiscal
disparities. Well, wait for you. I completely agree with you. Great. Good to hear. A lot of people actually would think I don't have that viewpoint, but I'm glad to hear that we're understanding inappropriate uses of fiscal disparities. So, thanks. Glad to hear that. Got that one on the record. But, okay, so Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering what percentage of the money the NRP get is absorbed in operations or leadership salaries, however that may be categorized, because there must be some people that are paid to run 72 organizations in there of some sort.
I believe Mr. Miller, who is the executive director of the NRP, is in the best position to answer that question.
Okay, Mr. Miller, are you using the funds correctly and efficiently and effectively and not wasting anything?
Madam Chair, of course. 8.4% is the latest calculation that we've done on that.
Okay.
Which amounts to, I don't know what, I'm not sure, the total amount is and what 8% is of, I suppose that was given.
I think compared to nonprofits, that's pretty good.
The second
one. In the industry. I think it's very good. So I think the most nonprofits don't kind of hit the 8.4% mark.
These are nonprofits, aren't they, Madam Chair?
Right, but I'm saying I think they're doing if that's an accurate number, they're doing it more efficiently than most nonprofits in Minnesota. They're good deeds.
Madam Chair, can you put any dollar figures on total?
Mr. Miller, dollar number?
8.4%. I'm just asking our financials bureau here to do the arithmetic. It's 8.4% out of $280 million.
Okay.
$280 million?
$280 million.
Over 30 years.
Yeah, it's over a 30-year period of time.
Or
an 18-year period.
Representative Dabney.
Just to this point to help illustrate for committee members how NRP is able to do it on 8.4% in contrast to most other nonprofits. My wife has run a couple of these neighborhood groups, including the Stevens Square that was mentioned earlier. You get a core of professional staff who are the ones who are able to do the coordinating, do the organizing, answer the phones, turn on the lights, and then, as has been testified, you get a broad involvement of volunteers. Mm-hmm. The Heart Association certainly, for instance, you know, pick your favorite nonprofit, I think tends to rely much more heavily on service delivery by paid staff.
Right.
And with NRP, you get a core of paid staff, and then if they're doing their job right, a wide involvement of volunteers, so the lower rates of administrative costs.
Thank you for that. Well, and I think we want to hear from Representative Clark before we finish up here in closing, and, you know, any other questions members have. I do want to share, you know, we're not going to vote on this. We've had a really good hearing here. I know that the folks, Representative Loeffler, who's sitting here, Representative Mallory, Dabney, Clark, I mean, these folks are the best and brightest in trying to figure this out, and they're very committed to this. You know, we're struggling as other legislators with the tax policy implications for everybody else in the state. And Representative Clark has said she's going to keep working on this. I don't know where this will go, but I hope it sheds some light on a lot of other issues that the tax committee has to deal with. And when they take a position on this, it creates a lot of other problems for lots of other people. So, you know, we have to think this through. I think the numbers, while people maybe are uncomfortable seeing them, it's helpful for everyone to understand what really has not come to light before. And I have to tell you this, our House research staff is so fabulous. I listened to the Senate tax hearing on this issue on the tape. And honestly, you know, people ask questions and no one can answer them. And I have to tell you, you know, we're really fortunate over in the House because we actually have a whole bunch of people who can put their heads to solutions and work with these legislators. So it was frustrating, honestly, Representative Clark, to listen to the presentation in the Senate and have questions get asked repeatedly, and really, you know, people said, well, you know, we'll talk about that in taxes, and then in taxes that didn't really happen either. So I know it's been a long night, but I wanted to take the time and use House research staff to bring forward in a nonpartisan way, in a non-political way, and what the impacts are in the tax world. So, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really do appreciate the time and that people stayed and we talked about it. And I think, you know, there's some good work that can come out of this, and I will just keep working on it. I don't know what the deadline for your tax bill is, but we're going to be working on this again tomorrow, I can tell you. That's for sure.
We've got another few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, and Representative Dabney wanted to add a comment as well.
Madam Chair, you and I have had several, I think you characterized them earlier as healthy discussions on this, and I've had any number of meetings with city staff on how to move a resolution forward here at the Capitol. I guess the piece I'd ask members to leave with is that in order for the state's largest city, or any city, to be strong, which is to the state's benefit, it needs to have strong neighborhoods. For the state to be strong, it needs to have strong communities. Townships, cities, towns, cities of the first class. To do that, we need different places need different programs. Representative Demo referred to the rural development grant. Minneapolis doesn't get a chance for those. We've got the Job Z program.
Yeah.
The metro area is specifically not invited to the table for Job Z. The governor had his seed initiative this year. The metro area was specifically not invited to the table. But we recognize that different places need different things to be able to build the state to its greatest strength.
Thanks for that, Representative Dabney, and thank you, Representative Clark. I really hope all your residents understand how really committed you are to their needs, and I appreciate the hearing, and I'm going to lay over House File 3821 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We are adjourned.